This is Neil the Real Deal Taylor, and you're listening to Kill Pop Culture.
Yeah, the reason I was pulling that up online to look at that is because I drank a cup of Death Wish coffee this morning, and I was looking it up to see exactly how much stronger it is than regular coffee. And according to this, how do you say that? Starbucks, the venti coffee. Which is stronger than the Dunkin' Donuts large coffee with turbo shot. I don't know if the turbo shot means espresso or whatever, but that Starbucks is now number two to Death Wish. Death Wish has 700. Well, here it says 651 milligrams. The other site said 728 milligrams of caffeine per 12 fluid ounces.
Holy shit!
And I'm pretty sure the average cup of coffee, like just regular Folgers or something, would be like 56.
I wouldn't sleep for a week.
I guess most importantly, or maybe it's most importantly, that it had a good flavor to it. It's not just a bunch of caffeine and
bitter.
Yeah, it tastes good. But you know, and of course, I didn't just like. I was mindful that I was drinking something really stout, so I didn't just pound it. You know, yeah. I've kind of nursed it, but I didn't really get any different effect, or like noticeably, like crazy
rapid heart rate or nothing like that.
Yeah, I didn't get like raged out and go in the streets and smash cars or anything. But
Tim did, huh?
Yeah, Tim, I think drank a couple of cups of it today.
There goes your heart, Tim.
Oh, and I was reading a story where there was this one lady that just she bought some Death Wish coffee because she was like, oh, well, that looks fun, I guess. And she didn't really realize, for some reason, she just thought it was just what they called their coffee. And she was just drinking it like regular coffee. And within after a few days, she went to the doctor with panic attacks and stuff and like really bad, you know, caffeine-related side effects.
Oh, that's never any good.
Yeah, and I think she finally figured out that Death Wish lives up to its name. And speaking of stuff that's over the top, yet again, we had another juvenile daring contest last night with the hot sauce. It seems like every time, I think the combination is me, you, and Barry Poole.
Always.
When we get together and we're eating something that you would put hot sauce on, which we grill a lot, so that's pretty much anything we cook out here. And we have, you know, I've said on the show before, we have a lot of hot sauces out here because Anthony brought a bunch, and we started daring each other. I dare you to, oh, try this one. Oh, this one's even hotter. Well, then Barry brought another one over. He's like, oh, this one's supposed to be even hotter than that one. And then I got that, was it Hell's Kitchen? Anthony gave me that one, too.
Yeah, the kick.
Kick-ass. Yeah, there was a kick-ass one with Carolina Reaper in it. So anyway, we get to like, daring each other. And it's always after we've had a couple beers. It's like, oh, come on, put more than that on there. It's like, okay, fine, I'll put more than you did. It's like, all right, well, check this out. And the next thing you know, we're all... obviously suffering immensely. <blood. laughs> And then the next day, we always text each other like, man, I feel like crap. So.
Yeah, my stomach was kind of in need of Zantac today.
I don't think we're ever going to learn our lesson on that.
No, probably not.
We should try some of these really hot, like hot sauces on the air, like while we're talking one night.
Yeah, we really should, but it's not going to be tonight. Give us a week.
No, it's not going to be tonight.
Give us a week to recuperate. You know, you'd think we would learn our lesson, but eventually they're going to come out with another one that's hotter than the Carolina Reaper, and we're going to do it.
Was it you that was saying sense. They've got like a chocolate Reaper now?
Yeah. It's, the Carolina Reaper's still hotter than it, though.
Well, right now I've got Tabasco peppers growing, which I've had a successful Tabasco plant that's been alive for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now. And you brought me the habanero plant that I just transplanted.
Cayenne.
No, I mean, yeah, cayenne. And then I just planted jalapenos, so.
Yeah, and I brought that jalapeno.
I think when I start expanding my peppers.
We're going to cross-pollinate them.
Yeah, but you can also, like, go on their website and buy, like, a bag of Carolina Reaper seeds.
Yeah.
Not that I would ever do anything with the Carolina Reaper. I just think it would be cool to say I was growing the hottest pepper in the world.
Right. Yeah, we're not dumb enough to actually do the Carolina Reaper challenge like you see online all the time where people are eating the damn thing. Or at least I'm not stupid enough. I value my life.
Oh, going back to coffee, I remember what I was going to say when I was talking about the death wish thing. Have you heard of black ivory coffee?
No.
I'm pretty sure it's called black ivory. Let me look that up real quick.
Black ivory coffee.
It's the most expensive coffee in the world.
How expensive is it?
Well, before I tell you how expensive it is, well, no, I'm going to tell you the price first. It's $73 for a bag that will basically brew you 5 cups of coffee.
What?
Well, that's before shipping.
It's like buying coffee from Javalia or something.
No, it comes from...
What's that? It says naturally refined by... does it come from elephant
They
poop?
Feed elephants the coffee beans before they're roasted. They wait for the elephants to go number two. They pick through the elephant poop, pull the beans out. I really hope they wash them first before they roast them. And then they put them in a bag and they sell them to rich people.
This is naturally...
At least I hope you're rich and paying $75 for five cups of coffee.
This is naturally refined by elephants. I think they should have said stored and aged perfectly or something.
Straight from the elephant's ass.
Straight from the elephant's mug.
Well, no, it's like there's the little bag that you get.
Yeah.
Get off. Is that the beans and stuff? That's the bean when they feed it to the elephant.
What was it you were talking about the other day? When you're roasting coffee beans or something like that, it doesn't smell as good as you would think. Or something you
were
talking
about. No, it stinks. I've roasted my own coffee beans. It does not smell good. Now imagine if that smell with elephant dung mixed in with it.
Ugh.
It's like...
I hope they wear masks.
It's like, what's that smell? That almost smells like elephant shit-covered coffee being roasted.
You better watch it. You gave somebody an idea. They'll be selling that on the market next.
And I think it comes from Thailand is where they do this, where they feed the elephants. And who... The science behind it is, I guess, is they say that the acid in the elephant's stomach like neutralizes the acids and certain... it breaks down certain elements of the bean... The ribosomes.
Ribosomes. I want some ribosomes.
The big smart word.
What's it say?
Shop. There it is.
$75.
$73. You get one 35-gram bag, which
equals a total of 5 cups.
Which would be about like a little sandwich bag, a little Ziploc sandwich bag full of coffee. It comes in a paper bag, but just to visualize that, yeah. that pouch right there is about, I mean, it's not big.
I hope that little sticker emblem thing.
Oh, and look at this. You can get this fancy percolator.
So you can watch
with,
it.
You can get the little percolator with 3 bags of coffee. They've got it on sale for $480.
So you can actually watch your elephant shit-covered coffee brew.
Look at that thing, though. I imagine, like, if the cops raided your house and saw that, they'd be like, all right, where's the meth at?
Yeah, what kind of...
boys cooking meth in here.
It was like a big, fancy bong.
It's like, no, I wish we were smart enough to cook meth and not sit here drinking coffee that's got elephant poop in it.
Right.
So, anyway, enough about that. We got a really good show tonight. This is actually episode 69 of Kill Pop Culture. We'll try to keep our adolescent chuckles to a minimum. Really good show, man. In typical time travel fashion, I've already been editing the interview we had tonight with Neil, the Real Deal Taylor. The interview is great. We had a good time talking to him. Only problem is that damn echo came back like in the middle of the interview. I can't remember what interview we did recently where your microphone just out of nowhere just started echoing. And I'm not really sure. It's not like terrible.
Is it because we plugged it in through that?
I don't know. But mine wasn't buzzing this time. I think that was actually a bad cable on my mic, but it didn't ruin it. It was a great, great interview, and I want to get to that in just a minute. A little quick update on my subscription to DC Comics. When this airs, it will be the 10th of May.
Yeah.
And I subscribed, what did I say, April the 11th?
Yeah.
I still haven't yet to receive a comic book in the mail.
Those bastards.
So I'm going to be honest about the whole experience. I know we talk about comics on here a lot, so I think it'd be important to let people know if that's a good idea. I'm going to keep everybody updated on how long it takes me to get my books, but so far that's been definitely the downside, is my books hadn't coming in. But a good segue, talking about comic books, I went to the new comic book store in Amory, Arcadia, this Saturday, and you actually went today, right?
Right.
Really nice to actually purchase comic books in Amory, Mississippi again. I was telling them when I was in there, when I was in high school, you could buy comic books at Big Star. They had a rack. They had Jitney Jungle, the drugstore on Main Street. What was that called?
People's Drug.
People's Drug. They had a big magazine rack there.
That's where
with
I used
comic
to get
books.
A lot of mine from.
And even Walmart carried comic books for a while. You know, I couldn't wait till it was comic book day. And I would always get pissed off when I went to the comic book rack and they put too many in one little slit and it would fold over in the front.
Yeah.
And you would have to dig back for one that wasn't all messed up. But yeah, it was nice to have a comic book store open in Amory again. There hasn't been one in several years. And it's really cool. It's really nice in there. If you live in the area, you definitely come check him out. We're actually going to have the owner in here with us in the studio on the next episode. So we'll be talking to him.
Hey, you know, I got to applaud him too because he had a really good selection today. I think he said you went in there the other day and he had a smaller selection. But, I mean, he just has opened the door. So, you know, all that's going to grow.
Yeah, he literally opened Friday was the first day.
Yeah, but like today he had four long boxes of comics, and he's got everything from Dark Horse Comics all the way through First Comics and Marvel, DC, and a little bit of everything in between. So if you're in the area, go check him out.
For sure, and maybe hopefully soon they might get the ability to do subs there, and maybe they can help me out with my little problem. Because don't get me wrong, I'm all about supporting the local comic book store, because I actually had somebody mention that, like, why did you get a subscription through DC? You know, you need to support the local comic book shops and help keep them open to do your subs there. And I'm like, I would love to, but there's not one. You know, there's not a comic book store even in Tupelo anymore. So lo and behold, we have one in Amory now, so hopefully. Because I would much rather do my sub through a comic book store. Another thing real quick in the comic book world that I wanted to mention, just because I thought it was really awesome, is I finally got around to watching that new documentary on Hulu. I've heard about the whole Bill Finger thing.
Yeah.
You know, my whole life I've been into Batman, and I see Bob Kane, Bob Kane, Bob Kane. Even in the movies, the TV shows, it's always created by Bob Kane. And I knew there was a controversy behind the whole thing with Bob Kane and Bill Finger, but I never knew
the
whole story. I just knew that there was some controversy there and that they used to work together and whatnot. So anyway, Hulu has this documentary out now. As you can only watch it on Hulu, and it's called Batman and Bill. And basically, you remember when we had Chuck Dixon on the show, and I was asking him about him creating Bane, and he said, well, Bane actually has two dads. He said, me and then the guy, forget his name, the guy that drew it for him.
Yeah.
He said, we co-created it. Well, that's basically the way it was with Batman. It was Bob Kane and Bill Finger, but Bill Finger never got the credit that he deserved. And after watching this documentary, I realized, man, he deserved a lot of credit. Not taking anything away from Bob Kane, but basically what happened is, and I'm not giving away the story behind it, but this is just the controversy behind the documentary, is that the company approached Bob Kane about doing a new character because Superman was doing really well, and he thought of the idea for Batman, Bob Kane did, and he gave him the name, and he drew up some concept art. And on his original concept, and it showed it, Batman was in a, it was called The Batman, just like it is now, the Bat-Man, and then it had the dude, and the dude's like wearing all red, like red spandex suit, almost like the Flash's, but he had like black boots and black like tights, like underwear.
Yeah.
He had bat wings, and he had on a mask that looked like Robin's, and he had blonde hair. That was his Batman.
What?
And he showed it to Bill Finger, and Bill Finger was like, okay, he said, well, you want him to be a creature of the night, right? He said, we're going to do away with this red. He said, let's go creature of the night. Let's go like with gray and black, like darker colors. And, you know, and he said, this blonde hair and this mask isn't very intimidating. He said, I don't think he's fighting criminals. They're going to be really scared of him. He said, let's put a whole cowl on his head. And he's like, yeah. And then let's put like some ears, like Batman bat ears. So he looks like, you know, his namesake. And he said, instead of bat wings, why don't we give him a cape and make it flail out like it's bat wings?
Right.
So basically, he completely changed everything about Bob Kane's original concept art. And he said, you know, when he got done, he's like, what do you think about this? And he's like, yeah, I love it. Let's run with it. And he basically created, from Bob Kane's idea, the Batman that we see today. And it goes a lot further than there, but I don't want to, you know, I want you to go watch it. I'm going to tell you the whole thing, but you find out just how heavily involved Bill Finger was with everything. A lot of the main stories, a lot of the main ideas, even the backstory, so much of just Batman in general that he created, and all those original iconic stories that made Batman so popular, it was all him. Well, not all him, but those were his. He was writing those. And then, like, Bob Kane would turn them in. And I guess they just assumed that Bob Kane did everything because he was the one turning them into the people that ran it. And they didn't care who was writing it and who was drawing it. I mean, they had a deadline and they had a comic book to put out. They would probably wouldn't have cared if Bob Kane's grandmother was drawing it.
Right.
Or writing it, rather. So there was a lot of confusion and a lot of controversy, and back then there wasn't like a lot of clear contracts. A lot of things was just like a handshake and a verbal agreement and stuff like that. And they had no clue it was going to turn into this multi-billion-dollar empire. So they didn't get lawyers involved back then and things like that. You're talking about 1939 here. So anyway, I finally got a chance to sit down and watch that, and it's really good. And you don't even have to like comic books. I mean, it was very, very well put together documentary. Even if you hate comic books, you would think it's good. Like, there's some moments that almost make you cry. Because there's, like, some, like, really sad parts. There's some really, like, awesome parts. And I think one of the cool undertones behind it is, like, is they were kind of seeking justice, which, ironically, you know, that's what Batman's right. all about. And his real-life dad, or one of his real-life dads, was in being unjustly treated in real life. And there was one main guy set out to correct that.
Right. So basically, it's kind of like you said, it has two creators, kind of like Superman did.
Yeah, co-created. Well, this isn't giving away anything because it's common knowledge now, because they started with Batman v Superman. I guess with that, everybody knows that in the end, they finally won, because now everything they do says created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. So he finally got the credit he so well deserved for being.
You know, and they did the same thing for Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
I'm telling you, there's a documentary, I promise you, with the success of this one, which I'm sure it's going to have, there's a lot of controversy behind the Superman
yep.
dudes, because they sold their rights for like $130 or something crazy yep. like that, and then they went to court so many times trying to get the rights back to Superman.
Yeah, because Superman basically came out as a newspaper Sunday funny kind of thing.
Well, yeah, that's basically how comics. Well, that's how they started. They were in newspapers, and they called them the funnies. They called them comics because all comic strips were funny. And then they decided, hey, why don't we put some serious ones in there? And they had like Dick Tracy and stuff like that. And the actual, this is a little comic book history trivia. Most people don't realize the original like vigilante hero. And not counting Zorro, but like the kind of like comic book superhero that predated Superman was a character called the Phantom. And there was a lot of Phantom strips. And when comic books first came out, they were just collections of the strips that had ran in the papers.
Yeah.
Just like they put a bunch of them together. And then they became so popular, they finally did standalone comics. And that was all in the 40s, you know, around the late 30s, early 40s.
Well, I'm looking up the Wikipedia right here. And, you know, of course, Wikipedia is not always 100% correct. But it says here, Detective Comics paid Schuster and Siegel both $94,000.
That's not much considering the empire that they essentially created.
Right, but exactly, which is, it puts in quotation marks right beside it. $94,000 then equals about $940,000 after adjusted with, you know, for inflation reasons and stuff. So, and then as soon as they did that, they fired both of them.
Mm-hmm. And can you imagine? I mean, who? I don't even know if you could put a price on what Superman's worth. And $900,000 or $90,000 back then, it's not that much money.
No, that's not a lot at all.
For basically coming up with this character that kickstarted all of this.
Yep.
But anyway, I didn't mean to get off into like a huge thing about comics. I just thought that was a really cool documentary. Do we have anything other than our upcoming show we need to plug before we jump to this interview? I know we're going to be at the First and Last May the 27th. That's just here in a couple weeks.
Yep.
I guess that's it. This is a good long interview, so I don't want to waste any more time. Let's jump to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Taylor.
All right. We are joined live in the studio with Neil the Real Deal Taylor. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. It's man, you guys drug me way out here in the boonies.
Yeah, man. Well, we can't be around people. We don't like civilization.
It seems like you guys are hiding from the government or something out here.
I do a little prepping. I'm not gonna lie. I got a few bunkers.
Oh, wow.
I bury ammo in the yard. You know, stuff like that. Tinfoil hats. You were telling me earlier you had a show last night. How did that go? Where was that?
We were up in Boonville, Mississippi. They do a little weekly wrestling show up there, and I kind of drop in, drop out every now and then, and was there last night for kind of a one-off, and I guess that one-off will turn into something ongoing because evidently I won the championship up there last night.
Nice. Oh, you're the champ now, right?
So, yeah. The booker up there figured out the easiest way to keep me coming every week because I'm one of them people. I'll do a few weeks and then I kind of go away. So the first weekend, he just puts a belt on me. So here we are. So, you've got to be here every week. So
right, you got to defend your title.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me into one of the questions I had for you. How many different promotions are you working for right now on a regular basis?
Right now, honestly, not a lot. Probably the last couple of years kind of took a little bit of a hiatus from wrestling. I used to, you know, and I don't tell a lot of people this, but this month I've been wrestling 18 years.
Oh wow.
And I don't, you know, and I the reason I tell people that, or I don't tell people that, is a lot of these shows you get these guys that, man, they'll get a microphone and I've been doing this for 20 something years and they've never been any higher than where they are.
Right.
So it's almost like they're cheating themselves. So yeah. I try to stay away from that, but yeah, I've been doing this a long time and it's, you know, overtime takes a lot of wear and tear on you, so kind of a little more selective of what I do these days.
You pick your battles.
Yeah, quite exactly. Well, when you get old, that's what you have to do.
Well, cool. I know it's kind of a cliche question to ask, but you know, you brought up you've been doing it a long time. When did you actually start? Like, what got you into it? Like, give us the backstory.
Well, just kind of like anybody else, was a fan through my childhood. Loved wrestling as a kid. You know, Hulk Hogan was You know, right there next to Jesus on, you know, on our wall at my house. You know, everybody loved Hulk Hogan and Jerry Lawler. But I just liked it through being a kid, and then got into high school. I got hooked up with another good friend of mine. His name's Tony Dabbs. You guys know him.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
Yeah, he his stepdad was a wrestler and kind of got me a foot in the door somewhere, and kind of talked him into training me, and trained for about on and off for about a year and a half. And then just so happened, May the 29th, 1999, I was at a helping promote a show, and got in. One of the other wrestlers didn't show up, and Tony was actually the one that spoke up and said, "Hey, put Neil in there. He can do it." And I'm just like, "Are you talking about me?" And at the time,
you're like looking over both shoulders, like, "Who's he pointing at?"
Exactly. And at the time, it was one of the biggest indie crowds that had ever been drawn. We did like 700 people down in Louisville, Mississippi. Yeah, I found out 10 minutes for my match that, "Hey, you're wrestling today, so or tonight." So, yeah, it was. But you know, like anybody else, it's, you know, it's something you watch as a kid, and it's something I always wanted to do.
I always compare everything to being, especially when it comes to like a local. I think a local independent wrestler and a local independent musician, other than the obvious, have everything in common.
Right.
I draw parallels to that, and I've been around long enough in the music business, and you've been in the wrestling business now for quite some time. I've seen it really, really change on, like, the amount of people that come out to things. Amount of people that just leave their house to go do something in general has changed drastically. And by today's standards, if you can get 70 to 100 people at a concert, that's like a win. But 10 years ago, that would have been a complete and total failure. Do you see something like that? Does that happen in the wrestling community?
You know, it kind of, honestly, you know, in wrestling, it's just like, it seems like it's like music at times. It takes kind of hills and valleys. When I first got into wrestling was, right off of, or right at the beginning of the Attitude era of, and if anybody put a ring up, you know, it would draw a big crowd.
People would show up.
Yeah, it didn't matter, you know, who was on it, if they'd never heard of them or what. You know, they were, people would show up in just huge crowds. And nowadays, you almost have to have some sort of legend or somebody they've seen on television or something to draw a crowd. And you know, that's a gamble, you know, even now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned you being a fan of wrestling when you were younger, before you became a wrestler. What were some of the big names that really inspired you? You brought up Hogan and Lawler, but was it a particular promotion? I know for me, the first thing I really saw was Memphis Wrestling.
Yeah.
Was there a particular promotion or particular wrestler that really made you think, like, "Hey, I want to do this one day"?
Well, being from this area, I kind of started watching wrestling backwards. When I first started watching wrestling, it was all WWF and Hulk Hogan. You know, it was, mm-hmm. you know, late 80s. The first pay-per-view that I could remember them pushing was WrestleMania 5, I think. And so I – nothing but WWF, and then gradually kind of started working into NWA when it started to go into – where it started turning into WCW. And then I actually didn't start watching Memphis wrestling until early 90s. And that's kind of a funny story. I remember the – little stint that I had when I worked for Lawler in Memphis Wrestling. We'd get there early in the mornings, and Mr. Guy Coffey was there. Of course, Mr. Guy Coffey had been associated with Memphis Wrestling for years and years. He was the only Tennessee Athletic Commission officer that they had ever had. And he was telling some stories, and he asked me about the first angle I ever saw, and I told him it was Jeff Jarrett against the Moondogs. He said, "Are you serious? That's what you first remember?" I said, "Yeah, that's what I remember." He said, "You missed all the good stuff." I started watching wrestling kind of backwards. WWF and Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and you know, those were the big guys in my house when I was a kid.
The reason I started with Memphis Wrestling is because that was the only channel I got at the time that had wrestling on it. That was before we had cable. And I can't remember what channel that was. That it came on Saturday mornings. And I was just like, wow, this is awesome.
It's probably TV5.
Yeah, maybe TV5
out of Memphis. And my mother actually went into labor with me. And Lawler and Dundee were on the television. And this is a legit story. My mother tells me all this all the time. And I've told Bill and Jerry both this. Bill thinks it's funny and Jerry hates it.
It's just meant to be, man. Yeah,
I guess so. I guess.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, you were mentioned earlier you're a champion at the moment. You have a title right now. And the first time I saw you wrestle, and correct me on the promotion, I think it was TFW. Wrestling in Skyline?
Yeah, that's what it would have been.
Was it TFW?
Yeah.
The first time I saw you wrestle, you were the champion at that promotion. Do you have any particular title run that's like I know they're all probably like awesome, but is there one that is like you're particularly proud of?
Probably when I become the Southern Heavyweight Champion in 2000. That would have been 2001, I think, with the first television run, the IWF, and we were on WKDH in Tupelo. Held that title for, probably 7-8 months, I think. But the belt that we actually had had passed through several hands, and it actually been used in USWA for a long time. So the belt itself had a lot of lineage to it. So it was kind of cool just to haul that belt around knowing who all had carried it, you know.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So, you know, probably that Southern title run was probably the most memorable of all.
How many actual titles have you held?
Oh, Jesus. I couldn't even begin to tell you. I've literally worked on shows where I've been booked, I've walked in the dressing room, gotten dressed, and they handed me a belt and said, here, you're the champion, you're going to defend the title tonight, but you're actually going to lose it. And I'm like, okay. So, and I have to go
so
back.
So I've got to drop a title that I didn't actually win.
Yeah, I never actually won. And I would have to go back and I would like, okay, what is the title called? You know, because I didn't have any idea. They'd hand me a belt and say, okay, we want you to go out there with this belt. You're going to drop it tonight to such and such. And here you go. So I honestly couldn't even begin to tell you how many times. I was a NWA. Oh my gosh. It was one of the NWA affiliates. Where I was actually listed on the NWA website for a while. And not the music group, by the way. NWA, it wasn't New South. It might have been NWA Main Event, I think, out of Nashville. Me and a guy named Will Owens from over to Huntsville were the tag champions there. I almost forgot about that. We were tag champions there for about a year, and which was fun because I got a paid trip to Nashville every month, mm-hmm. you know. So that was always a big plus.
Do you like wrestling tag matches or singles better?
No real preference. The first three or four years I was in the business, I did tag matches with my old buddy Gene Jackson. Primarily now I do all singles matches. And, you know, I kind of – maybe these days I like tag matches a little better because they're a little easier on you. You kind of get to share the bumps with somebody else.
Yeah, you get a minute to
get a little break. Your win. So.
So your preference, being a heel or a face?
I've never seen you as a face. Does
really?
No, I've seen you wrestle several times, over 25 times, and I've never seen you as a face.
You know, it's funny. I've gotten to where being a heel was so much fun because in the beginning because it was so easy. It's so easy to make anybody hate you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I could tell either one of you something right now and you'd hate my guts.
Right.
It's hard for me to get you to like me. So that was almost a learning curve when I first got in. It's like, oh my God, you know, how do I get these people like me?
Yeah.
But, you know, that was one thing with watching Jerry Lawler for so many years, you know, being kind of the same body size and, you know, not really a
pretty boy.
Yeah, a pretty boy. That's exactly it. Not really being a pretty boy, you have to You have to figure out how to tell the story with your body. You have to figure out how to sail the right way to draw sympathy from the people. You have to make them feel sorry for you when you're in the situation that I'm in. And Lawler was a genius at it and still is. So, you know, being a heel is a lot of fun because a lot of times you can go out there and tell people what you really think of them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because a lot of people will come up to you after a show. Oh, man, I love that. You were, man, you did good tonight. And I was like, sitting there thinking, I was like, that's what I really think of you. You know?
So one person that comes to mind for me on that is Jimmy Blaylock. That dude is always in character.
He's all like, even when he did the podcast, he was like, "Oh, y'all coming up there on a tractor?" Because he's making fun of us for being, you know, in the Hatley area. Oh.
I love Jimmy. I've worked with Jimmy as a manager and against Jimmy so many times, and it's the honest to God's truth. You know, Jimmy is Jimmy. There isn't a character there. It's just Jimmy turned up a little bit. But Jimmy's probably one of my best friends in the business. I hang out with Jimmy outside of wrestling a good bit. Matter of fact, we're going to see Wayne Brady at the casinos next weekend. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, he messed around and got us some tickets through an agent or something. You know, Jimmy was on the Wayne Brady show.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, so he knows people there somehow. So yeah, we're going to see Wayne Brady next weekend. That should be a lot of fun.
Nice.
That's really cool. Being that you started out like in the 90s. That's kind of when, in the early 90s, is when internet just became, and internet basically more or less killed kayfabe.
Mm-hmm.
And, but prior to that, in like the 80s, you know, you hear stories about how the wrestlers, they couldn't travel together, the heels and the faces.
Right.
They couldn't stay in the same hotels.
Right.
They couldn't dress together.
Right.
Like, I've heard a lot of interviews where the old guys would talk about, They had to book separate flights because they didn't want to hurt kayfabe.
Yeah.
And now that internet's here, and then kayfabe died, and then they've realized, well, it's okay. It didn't hurt anything. You were kind of around during the kind of when, like I said, when internet, you know, hit big, when it was a household thing everywhere.
Right.
And I can only imagine you being a heel in that time, in that era. You probably made for some interesting situations for you, because the fans still probably at that point weren't 100% like, oh, he's just playing a character.
Right.
They're like, this guy's really a total dick, and we're gonna go smash his card.
Yeah.
Have you found yourself in situations with fans that was kind of like pretty bad?
A couple of times. I remember I was wrestling it was a Sunday afternoon show up in a little town called Gibson, Tennessee. It's up close to Humboldt. And me and Gene Jackson, the guy that I tagged with, we were doing this angle where we came in and we hated the South. We were called Southern Destruction. We hated the South and, you know, rednecks and everything that went along with it. And we did this segment in the show where we were out there and we had a Confederate flag with us. Mm-hmm. And the commissioner of the show came out and he's getting on us about something or whatever. So we end up beating him up. Excuse me. We end up beating him up. And, of course, he goes down. We take this Confederate flag. We lay him down on the flag. We roll him up in the flag. I had a
like a burrito.
Yeah, like a
burrito.
Like a
Confederate burrito.
Yeah, like a burrito. And I had gotten a bottle of charcoal lighter fluid and dumped it all out and put water in it. We squirted that thing down, and then we had a lighter. Like we were fixing to set this guy on fire in that flag. And anyway, so the baby faces come out, and we take off or whatever. But we were leaving, and one rule of thumb we always had was we will never stop in a town that we wrestle in at a store or anything, because especially in Tennessee, you just don't know.
Right.
And this one particular day, we're running behind, so we're about out of gas. So we had to stop at a gas station. So I'm standing outside pumping gas. This woman, who was obviously a grandmother, got out of her car, pulled up right up behind my car, got out of her car with her grandchild, and started sending obscenities like you would have never thought a grandmother ever could have. And I'm just standing there kind of in awe, like, is this really happening? About that time, Gene gets out of the car, and he looks at that woman. He says, "Lady, the damn show is over. The best thing you can do is get back in the effing car and go home." And that's exactly what the woman did. She got back in the car and went home.
Oh, wow.
But there was another time up in Nashville. It was actually the first time that I wrestled Jerry Lawler. We were in the middle of the match, and I'd done something. I'd got outside and was hollering at everybody or whatever. I got back in the ring, and the referee looked at me, and he said, "Don't go back outside." And I said, "Why?" He said, "The guy that's in the wheelchair has a knife." It was a guy on oxygen in a wheelchair, had a knife in his hand.
Holy crap.
And I looked down there, and I could see it. You could see the blade of it sticking out.
Yeah,
I'm just like, oh, my God. So, obviously, I rolled back out of the ring and went straight to the guy and just told him I'd step on his hose and watch him die. I mean, but, yeah, boy, he was all torn up. But I've had a few things happen. I've had some paper balls thrown at me that had a rock in them.
Yeah.
I've been hit in the head, you know, a few times. You know, some of that kind of stuff. You never know.
That makes me think of my next question. Injuries. What's some of the worst injuries you've had?
Hands down, the absolute worst injury I ever had. And I've been lucky. I've never had anything broken or anything serious. But I got kicked in the sternum, right in the center of my sternum, full blast one time. And literally to this day, and that probably happened probably 2002 or 3 maybe. And literally now when it gets cold weather, I can still feel that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can't breathe, you can't cough, you can't laugh.
You're talking to a guy who's got like a metal plate behind his.
Oh, really? Stand-up. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Or, well, you probably know more about what I'm talking about than I do. But that was probably the worst. I hyperextended my knee one time. I bent my knee backwards one time in a match. And, most of the time when you're wrestling, your adrenaline's going so fast, you know, you don't really realize what's happened to you until after the fact. As soon as that knee went backwards, everything stopped. Yeah, I knew exactly. Right away. I was like, oh, my gosh. But managed to get through the rest of the match. So, but I've been lucky. I hadn't had anything serious happen to me injury-wise.
Well, what's the wrestling – like etiquette there, like if somebody, you know, hits you with a stiff shot or a stiff kick, obviously harder than they should have, I mean, do you call them out and be like, "Dude, you like freaking hurt me. What's the deal here?"
Well, it just kind of depends. I would rather somebody full blown blast me in the head as to totally miss me and it looked terrible.
Yeah.
And I've been hit so hard. It's unreal. I've seen like the little white dots. Yeah. I've been hit so hard.
Yep.
But, you know, you have to keep a cool head when you're in there. You know, if you get tagged a little bit extra hard, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, the guy's going to say, "Oh, I'm sorry." You know, you'll hear him. But if not, he just continues to keep blasting you, and it's happened before. You know, you keep receipts for that, and you send it back.
Give it back. Yeah.
You know, and I've done that a few times. I had to, but usually it doesn't happen as much as it used to because, you know, 9 times out of 10 now, you know, because I've been around for 100 years, it seems like. I don't really have to deal with that a whole lot anymore. But did a lot when I first broke in.
Speaking of injuries, this, I guess, is a segue to something I wanted to bring up because I've got a wristband that you gave me, like, it was either 2002 or 2012. Yeah, I know it had a 2 in it, but it said the Neil Taylor Retirement Tour. And I remember telling you, "Dude, wrestlers don't retire. What's wrong with you?" So obviously you changed your mind, so tell us about that.
Well, you know, and I remember that. It was gosh, it was 2014, I think. 13 or 14, I don't know. Anyway, everything runs together with me. But, you know, I just got to a time where I had spent every Friday and Saturday and sometimes Sunday and sometimes Thursday.
You were burnt out.
Wrestling. Totally burnt out. And it's like, you know, it's stuff with my family, like birthday parties, my mom and stuff like that I ditched to go wrestle because, You know, it was funny. My folks used to get mad at me because they would have to book stuff like 2 months in advance for me to be able to go and participate.
Family had to book you.
Yeah, my family had to book me. And you know, sometimes it's still that way because I still stay busy, just not as much wrestling anymore. But I had finally decided, it's like, okay, I'm fixing to quit this. I'm fixing to have a semi-normal existence. I'm going to go to the movies and, you know, go drink a beer when I want to and do this or whatever. And that's what I'm going to do. December of this year, whatever the year that was, I'm done. You know, I'm done. And, you know, they kept calling and I kept going. So, So, but you know, it's funny. I've been doing it for so long. When I find myself on weekends that I don't wrestle or I don't have anything to do, I'm bored out of my mind.
Yeah. That's kind of how we are. If we don't have podcast related stuff or band related stuff, you know, we try to take time for family and everything, but if we're not doing something music related or podcast related, it might be 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night. We'll get a text from one another. Hey, what are you doing? Bored. Have a nightcap.
Yeah, really. But I just got to where, okay, if I'm not wrestling, I'm bored out of my mind. So, and you know, I guess it kind of helps your ego a little bit when you try to quit and people keep calling you and keep trying to book you and keep right. want you to be
well,
there.
Yeah, you know? And you've been doing it so long that people freak out. They're like, "Whoa, wait, what? Neil Taylor's quitting wrestling?
Well, you know,
something's wrong."
But. You know, I got to a point to where I just kind of wanted some sort of normal existence, and then I figured out normal is pretty boring.
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, I'll keep wrestling, and the initial thought was, okay, I'll keep wrestling, but I'm not going to do as many shows as I normally do, because it, you know, when I first got in, every opportunity you had to be in a wrestling ring, it didn't matter if it was 7 days a week, you were in it. And when I first got in, I was wrestling sometimes 4 and 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And did that for a long time. And then, now I'm pretty selective these days just because of, you know, physicality. You know, I have knee issues and back issues and stuff. But, you know, I just decided that I was gonna calm down and just never did.
and not even counting the in-ring stuff, just that lifestyle alone of being on the road so much and burning the candle at both ends, it wears hard on you. And you don't even realize it until you kind of stop for a minute and go, "Ugh, I'm burned out."
Yeah.
And it sounds like you had your fill, you needed a break. Was there something, was there like a match or something in particular, like one thing that made you go, I'm retiring from retiring?
You
or
know,
was it just in general?
Well, just in general. I remember what made me make the decision to say, okay, I'm fixing to lay off this. And what had happened was I was traveling by myself, and a little bit of a different dynamic from being with a band is, I mean, you're traveling with people. Wrestling isn't that way. It's you, a car, and a radio, and a lot of times that's just it. And I was working a show up in Corinth, Mississippi every Friday, and I had gotten in a loop with 3 or 4 different shows to where it was a Saturday. I was working down on the coast in Hattiesburg, and then I would do a shot in Nashville. I would do a shot in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and then a shot over at Huntsville every so often. And it's like every week, it's a trip to one of these places.
Yes,
did it for 8 months straight by myself. Dang. And I remember when I decided, I was like, okay, I'm done with this for a while. And I had to I was finishing up in Nashville. It was actually when I was helping drop those tag belts. I left my house at 4 o'clock with my gear on, with warm ups over it. I drove straight to the building. I listened to a movie or something there. I pulled up in the parking lot. I finished listening to the movie. I went in as the bell for the first match was ringing, found out the finish, worked the match, got my money. Got straight back in the car with the gear on, warm ups on, and drove straight back home. I was home by midnight. I mean, I was like, I'm done with this. I'm ready to get done and go home.
Did you ever do 2-a-days? Like, you wrestled one promotion and then rushed to go do another one that evening?
I've done 3-a-day.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I've done 3-a-day. I've done gosh almighty. I've actually done I've done four shows in one day, technically. When I was doing Memphis Wrestling, they did a live show from 10 to 11, and then they did a tape. They did a tape show from 11 to 12. They were only live every other week.
Yeah.
So I did both of them shows. We would jump in a car, take off to like Blytheville, Arkansas or somewhere and do like a 2 o'clock show, and then jump back in the car and then go do another show in like Dyersburg that night, you know, and then come home.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I've done, you know, two and three shows in a day, you know.
That'll definitely take some wear and tear on you.
Oh, my gosh. And, like, I remember one time I did Corinth, Mississippi on a Friday night. I left Corinth, drove to Memphis, went to bed, got up, did live TV. Because you had to be up at, like, 8 o'clock to go do the TV. Did the TV. Got done there at noon. Jumped in the car, drove all the way to Hattiesburg, Mississippi for an 8 o'clock show. Did that show. And then sometimes I would turn around and come home.
That's not a short haul at all from Memphis to Hattiesburg
yeah.
either.
Some of those road trips, I think back now, and I'm thinking, I'm measuring that up to the fact that right now I couldn't drive to Memphis without falling asleep.
Yeah.
And I think, God almighty, how in the world did I do that? I was on the, you know, I was driving 10 hours in one day or more, you know. No idea how I got through that.
I think if we can, I'm going to take a break right here and save these files. But when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about your website. You got a podcast with Gene Jackson that
yeah.
you do. And I also want to talk to you some about your connection with Jerry Lawler. Seems like you and him have a lot of history together. I know you've wrestled him quite a few
okay.
times. But if we could take a quick break right here, I'm going to save these files. And
those new band shirts look awesome. Where did you get those done?
At Anarchy Design.
They do screen printing now?
Oh, yeah. They do professional custom screen printing at a very competitive rate.
Well, where can I find them?
Look them up on Facebook, facebook.com/anarchydesign69, or email them at anarchydesign69@gmail.com. You can check out some of their work on their Facebook page. When you're ready to order, you can send them your idea, or they can design it for you. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com.
And we're back. One thing I mentioned before we took the break is I want to talk about like your connection with Jerry Lawler, because you've wrestled that guy several times. How did that come to be?
Well, the first time that I wrestled him was, I think it was in 2006, up close to a little town right outside of Nashville. I honestly, I don't know really how that came to be. It just kind of happened. The promoter that was booking the show booked me, and when he booked me, he said, I'm going to book you to work Jerry Lawler. And of course, you know, that was my childhood, one of my childhood heroes, you know, and somebody I always wanted to wrestle. So, you know, we did the match, and it went really well. And, you know, I just kind of gotten branded as the guy here locally. If you bring in Jerry Lawler, Neil Taylor works him. So, which, you know, I was very, very lucky for that to happen. But I've wrestled Jerry Lawler. Oh, Lord. I couldn't tell you how many times, probably half a dozen at least. You know, same thing with Bill Dundee. You know, I've wrestled Bill Dundee everywhere. 100 times. I've actually beat Bill Dundee a couple of times. I worked Bill Dundee every Friday night for like 3 months one time. But you know, it's Jerry is such an easy person to work with, and any interview that you hear, somebody that's worked with Jerry will talk about how easy it is, because it's just, there's something about working with Jerry, but he can take the smallest thing and make it mean so much. And I think that's, you know, why Jerry is the age he is now, and he's in excellent shape, you know, outside of the, you know, the heart attack he had on Raw that night. But, mm-hmm. You know, he's not, I think he's had maybe one major injury, and that was when, you know, he broke his leg that time, but that was playing football. That yeah. was Jerry Calhoun's fault. But you know, as far as wrestling-wise, you know, he's never really had a major injury. And I think it attributes to that, because Jerry knows how to sell things, and it's funny.
He really tells a story in the ring.
Exactly, and I learned more in two matches working with Jerry Lawler than I learned in 10 years worth of working with other people. It's amazing to get to work with somebody that's got that kind of experience.
So it's like he kind of takes you under his wing?
Well, yes and no. It's just when you're in the ring, you pay attention to what other people do and what they – you know, what they tell you to do.
Right.
And when they tell you to do it, it kind of clicks. It's like, okay, that's why I would do that. That's why I do that that way. So, you know, it kind of, you know, it's definitely a learning experience. And any time that, you know, after a match, you know, Jerry's one of them people that kind of pulls you aside and say, listen, this is what you need to do. This is why you need to do it. You know, so anytime, you know, somebody like that, you definitely listen to them.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was trippy to me when he first came to Amory, because probably anywhere else, maybe anywhere else in the country, if you talk about a name that's synonymous to pro wrestling for everyone, even if they don't watch wrestling, they may say like Hulk Hogan, but in the Southeast, because of Memphis wrestling, like the one iconic name that's synonymous with like the Babe Ruth of wrestling, it would be Jerry Lawler. That's our. And then when they said he was coming to Amory, I was like, because he's, you know, he was and still is to this day, you know, still working for WWE. And I was surprised he was able to come do a show in Amory. But,
he's a very approachable guy, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's very accessible.
We talked about barbecue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, he's in the barbecue business now. Yeah, he's all about it now.
He actually invited us. We were supposed to do an interview with him that night, but Mark got sick and wasn't able to make the show.
Yeah.
And so instead of me trying to just do the interview by myself, because I would have been like a giddy little schoolgirl, instead of trying to do that, I just kind of just shot the shit with him. And stuff.
Yeah.
You know, kind of got a feel for him. But he invited us, you know, Kill Pop Culture, to come to Memphis up there to his little barbecue joint up there. And we're gonna make a trip one of these days soon.
Well, you know, he's got two now.
Really?
He's got the Hall of Fame Bar and Grill on Beale Street, which I've been to it, and it's awesome. Even if you're not a huge Memphis wrestling fan, just to go in there to see, because he's got a ton of WWE stuff in there too.
Yeah.
And like pay-per-view posters and all kinds of stuff. Of course, there's a lot of Memphis wrestling stuff in there too. And one thing that I find is really cool, if y'all go up there, is in one of the showcases that's over close to the bar, there's a pair of yellow and red – it's just cowboy boots that you can tell he had like airbrushed because they look horrible. But he wore those boots in the first match I ever wrestled him in. So don't mean a hill of beans to anybody else, but I think it's cool because you know he kicked me in the head with those boots.
I've been kicked by those boots.
Hey, that's what we need to do. Kill Pop Culture, Neil Taylor. We need to just go to Memphis.
Just load up
barbecue
go.
Joint. Hey, let's just go.
It's pretty cool, and because the day that I was there, Jerry actually wasn't there when I was there, but I went with it was me and Derek King and Eugene. Remember Eugene?
Yeah,
yeah. It was Nick Densmore, Eugene, me and Eugene, and Derek King went up there, and of course Randy Hales, a famous Memphis promoter, he runs a place for Jerry, and we actually got a pretty cool tour. We got our food on the house. We got to go. There's actually a VIP room down underneath the bar. It's got a ton of old stuff in it. It's got a pair of Tojo Yamamoto's old wooden shoes
Holy
in it.
Crap.
It's got a lot of cool stuff. It's got a remember the Jerry Lawler show they did on Sundays?
Yep.
It's got a mock set of the old Jerry Lawler show in it. And it's got pool tables and all kinds of stuff.
Holy
it's really cool. But yeah, we got the dime tour when we were there the last time. But it's a really cool place to go. And then he's got a barbecue restaurant out on Germantown Parkway that just opened about a month and a half ago, I think.
Oh, wow.
I haven't been in there yet, but everybody says it's really good.
You brought up Bill Dundee earlier, the interview we had with him.
Yeah.
When he told us how old he was, I thought he was joking. I swear to you, I thought he was – I was like, oh, he's exaggerating. But then I looked it up on Wikipedia. He's really in his 70s, and he's still wrestling. I guess that's kind of a testament to, speaking of retirement, to professional wrestlers that if he's still doing it, I mean –
Yeah, really.
Do you have in your mind kind of a long term, like, okay, when I get this age or when I accomplish this, have you ever even considered that got well, that far in retirement?
You know, if I was...
I know you tried it once, but...
You know, if I could make the money that Lawler and Dundee do per shot, I would probably do it and then go to my funeral the next day. But, yeah. You know, I've always been told that, you know, when it's time... And, you know, I think I'll know when I need to quit. You know, I think we're getting close to that. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything because, man, I've had so much fun. I've made so many memories. I've gotten to meet so many cool people. Saw stuff and been around stuff that nobody would ever dream of, you know. And I could sit here and I could tell you stories all day long. And sometimes when you tell stories like some of the stories I have, they look at you like, this guy's full of it, you know, but I actually have people that can back up some of these stories. So, you know, I've had so much fun wrestling. I pay for it every day, especially when I get out of the bed in the mornings when I'm shuffling across the floor trying to get my knees and my ankles loosened up so I can move for the day. But wouldn't give anything for it. You know, I don't know how much time left I have in wrestling, you know, but I still enjoy making the town, still enjoy entertaining people, you know, wrestling. It's getting a little more taxing these days, though.
Well, what about, like, if you decided to retire from wrestling, would you just retire from the business altogether, or would you go into, like, promotions?
I don't think I could ever walk away from the wrestling business. My dream at this point would be to have my own promotion and run my own shows, not like a weekly thing, you know, more like a monthly or semi-monthly type thing, but...
That would make them wait for it.
Yeah. You're right. But, you know, I would love to do that. And I've always had a little bit of a friend of mine calls it entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like and relating it to the band world, selling merch and stuff like that. I love selling merch at a merch table.
Yeah.
And you get to sit and talk to people and hear stories and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's all kind of cool characters that come through there.
Oh my Lord. The bad part is they'll be the interesting part, I should say, is somebody will walk up and you look at them and you know that they're probably a little older than you and come to find out they're not and said, man, I remember watching you in 2001 when I was in high school. And I'm just like, God, I'm old.
By the way, hashtag real deal wrestling promotion.
There we go.
I'm putting that in for the name of it. Where did the real deal thing come about? Was that just organic, or is that, were you trying to think of a...
I actually didn't come up with that. Tony Dabbs came up with that. We were doing a... it was back when... before I actually got to wrestling, I was ring announcing and managing a little bit. And... I can't remember the whole thing, but we were doing some tag match and I was in the corner as a special manager or something. And, Tony Dabbs was actually filled in just ring announcing for that one match. And he just spouted off Neil, the real deal, I guess, because it all rhymed, you know, and it just kind of stuck. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. Before we get out of here, I definitely wanted to plug and talk to you about a couple of other things you got going on. And we talked about this earlier when you first got here. Tell us about the podcast you're doing.
Well, you know, it seems like everybody's in the podcast world now, especially in wrestling. We do a podcast every Sunday night at 10 o'clock. We actually do a live podcast. It's called Locals to Legends Wrestling Radio with my buddy Gene Jackson, who was my very first tag team partner. You know, we... talked one night and, you know, we've traveled hundreds of miles together and used to enjoy talking about wrestling. And we thought it'd be a good idea to, man, why don't we just throw a podcast together and we'll get on there and have a few guests every now and then and just talk about wrestling. And that's, you know, that's kind of what we do. We've had on, tons of people. Most recently, probably the most known person was, Conrad Thompson from the Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard podcast. We had him on a short time back. We do a lot of, as the name says, a lot of local guys just trying to help get their name out, help people learn who they are. It's a lot of fun. We do call-ins, that type thing. So, you know, if anybody has a little space in their schedule for an extra podcast, make sure and check out locals to legends.com. It's got all of our info on there about how to listen to the show, call in, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I found it on iTunes, but you got a website as well.
Yeah, we actually have
links to. Okay,
we have a website, and it's kind of fun because we try to be a little bit interactive with it, with a lot of the stuff that we will laugh about and talk about on the show. Like we do a segment we call Bad Promo of the Week.
Yeah,
because if you get on YouTube, there's tons of god awful wrestling interviews. So we do a Bad Promo of the Week, and we'll air it on the show, and then we'll take like the website and we'll post a video of it from on the website, and then just, you know, random stuff we talk about, we kind of post it so you can go back and kind of have that visual. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you've actually got your own website too,
NeilRealDealTaylor.com. It's something that I kind of fool with some of my spare time. I do have an online store on there. You can buy Neil Taylor t-shirts and the Memphis Heat documentary, some of that kind of stuff. That's a lot of fun. I'm a little bit of a tech nerd too, so I like to get on there and fool around some. But I've had that website a long time. I try to keep it updated as I can. Toying around with the idea now of doing a semi-regular blog, which I like to write a little bit, and sometimes usually what happens is I'll sit down to write. It's like, okay, what do I write about? That's the hardest thing in the world to do. And somebody gave me the idea. It's like, man, you got tons of pictures. Why don't you post a picture and tell a story about the picture?
There you go.
So looking into probably doing that here, starting that up in the next week or two. So everybody make sure to check out NeilRealDealTaylor.com, and hopefully we'll get some stories on there, and make sure and check out my online store.
Awesome.
And you've got a Facebook, other social media. Do you have like Instagram and stuff like that?
I do. Pretty much everything I've got. Twitter is at Neil Taylor Brand. My Instagram is at Neil Taylor Brand. Facebook is just you search Neil Taylor, and I think it's actually facebook.com/Neil is here. I did that like 100 years ago, and I had no idea why I said it to that, but I think that's how you can get to me. But you can get to all that stuff at NeilRealDealTaylor.com. It's got all the links to it.
Awesome. Well, do you have any, like I said, this will air Wednesday. Do you have any upcoming appearances you want to plug, any shows coming up that off the top of your head?
The weekly show that looks like I'm going to be doing for a little while now, the EPW wrestling show in Boonville, Mississippi. They do that every Saturday night in Boonville. It's on Old Highway 45 out by the Prentice County Agri Center. Do that show every week there. I'll be there at least through the end of the middle of June. We got the OWO has the Ashland County Fair, the Ashland, Mississippi Fair coming up May the 12th and 13th, which is next weekend. Yeah. I just realized that. It's next weekend. All these – time flies when you get old.
Dude, that happens to me all the time. I'm like, we got a show when? It's like, no, yeah. Dude, that's in 2 weeks. I'm like, no.
Well, hell, that's this Friday. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So I've got a show this Friday in Ashland, Mississippi at the fair. So free wrestling with free admission to the fair, free wrestling. I think you have to pay to ride everything, and if you do that. So
have we got anything this weekend? We might need to check that out. Do we actually have a weekend free?
We have a weekend
we'll
free.
We'll have to check.
Oh,
that
wow.
out.
We have to go
road trip.
Yeah, road trip. So so Ashland, Mississippi, this coming Friday night. Make sure to come to the fair. Come check out the wrestling. Myself, Dustin Five Star, Extreme Bret Michaels. Ton of guys will be there Friday and Saturday night. I've got a show June the 2nd in Ripley, Mississippi for WECW Wrestling. So make sure and check that out. And try to keep all my dates posted on NeilRealDealTaylor.com. So anything outside of that, make sure and check out the website. And come see me. Come say hello. Buy some merch.
Man, yeah, you got some cool t-shirts, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm going to get online and order me one. But, man, I sure appreciate you coming out and taking time out of your day to drive out here in the boonies and hang out with us for a little bit. And it was real fun. We'll definitely have to have you back. Next time we'll have the grill fired up, and we'll, you know, we're Baptists. When we meet, we eat.
Hey, I'm all about that. I'm all about some eating.
Got the cold beer and the food on the grill.
Man.
All right, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming out today.
Man, I've had a blast just talking to you guys wrestling on here during the breaks, you know, before we went on the air, talking about wrestling. It's a lot of fun, and hope to get to come back and do it again sometime.
Man, yeah, we talk about this a lot, how it seems like when we take a break, sometimes the breaks is what we should record.
I was actually thinking that while ago.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of interesting stuff. Yeah, why don't we just record everything?
We do that every time.
Just as soon as you walk in the door, hit record.
I'm just going to start hiding.
Like an ambush recording.
I'm just going to start hiding hidden little recorders
there
all
you
around
go.
The room.
Being monitored.
Man, yeah. But I enjoyed you guys having me, and I appreciate you guys supporting wrestling. Seen you guys play myself, and I'm a big fan of your music. So maybe we can make these worlds cross somewhere.
Yeah,
that would be a lot of fun,
scene.
Wouldn't it?
Let's get
yeah.
that going.
There we go.
Do it.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our good friends and sponsors of this show, Shadow Stalkers Paranormal from Amory, Mississippi.
This isn't your average paranormal thing.
Shadow Stalkers is a nonprofit group that hosts fundraisers for families in need, and they also host fundraisers for historical sites.
Their fundraisers and paranormal investigations are open to the public, and they encourage everyone not to just watch, but to join in.
Look them up on Facebook and feel free to shoot them a message if you have any questions.
They are here to assist you with any paranormal needs you may have.
That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. Another big shout out to Neil, the Real Deal Taylor.
That was a really good interview, brother.
Stopping by and hanging out with us. Again, I always love doing in-studio stuff. A couple of things I wanted to hit real quick before we ride off into the moonlight. I know every week we play the commercial stating that we're still seeking other sponsors for the show. And I think maybe we're just used to hearing it so much now that it's almost like just another commercial within itself or something, but we really are looking for another sponsor because we got a lot of stuff in the works, like the website related stuff with the exclusive content, and that stuff's not just an idea in my head. Like, I've really spent a lot of time working on it, and I like for our podcast to kind of grow naturally. Like, I don't want to jump ahead of myself. In other words, I don't want to offer a whole new thing that isn't going to be able to support itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't want to bite off more than I can chew and then have to half-ass it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I like the way this show kind of grows naturally. Like, I'm a big believer in supply and demand. Like, the more listeners we have and the more interest we have in stuff, the more I try to put out there by way of content. And like I said, if we get another sponsor, I'd feel a lot more confident about this next chapter we're fixing to get into with the website stuff. A lot of people asking for Kill Pop Culture t-shirts now that we have them available. We've got another order coming, so just hang tight. If you requested one, we'll have those pretty soon. And don't forget, you can, if you want to commission us to advertise for you, just go to advertisecast.com, and there's a bunch of options available there. It's really easy to use. You just decide what you want, and you basically commission us, and we provide a service for you and advertise for you. So, enough plugging for that. Oh, yeah, I wanted to thank everybody for checking out our Comic-Con panel that we did with Gotham Central. It's the only thing we have on our YouTube channel at the moment. Kind of letting that marinate for a little bit, get some views up on it, get some traffic. And then I'd mentioned last week, how I really want to expand our listener base internationally. And I noticed that... like when you go and look at the ratings on Podomatic, like, it'll highlight the countries where people are listening, and it's normally just like North America, but like some other ones are starting to pop up now, which is really cool.
That's what it was, because you know I mentioned to you a while ago during the break that our Instagram has really taken off a little bit, and a lot quicker than I thought it would, and our Instagram is. We have listeners from all over the world now. Or, well, fans anyway. I mean, people that are following us, they're keeping up with us, at least through Instagram. Some of them I've noticed are starting to hit us up on Facebook as well.
I just pulled that up while you're... you see how North America's, like, highlighted there, and then Alaska. Yeah.
And then Hawaii's a little
dot. And then if you can see behind there, you can see England.
Yeah.
We have some UK fans. Last week, I think it was Australia was lit up. So we had a hit in Australia, and I think we did Canada. It resets every week. So right now, all you see is those three. But I did notice that when I was going through some of the stuff, trying to make sense of their stats.
You know, and a lot of that, we have to give credit where credit's due on that. A lot of that is because of you guys sharing the links, too, when we share them, helping us get the podcast out there. That means so much. So just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. We're very humbled and thankful whenever we see a show do really well, and all the ones we've put out lately have just really, really done good, and we appreciate it. This show would be nothing without our listeners. I know me and you would probably still sit here and talk and just not record it, but
yeah, we'd just ramble.
There definitely wouldn't be a podcast if we, again, supply and demand. If there was no demand, we just wouldn't hit record. We would just talk.
Well, I don't know. There, like I said in the interview with Neil that everybody heard a while ago, I'm tempted to start hiding recorders in here and just hitting record before we ever start a conversation, because we get into some really good in-depth conversations sometimes. So I'd like to keep them for my records anyway.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there was one thing that he brought up when we were off air that I wanted to kind of mention about pro wrestling in general, because it's a popular misconception, and it's about the ring itself, the wrestling ring. Some people, and I've even heard people say, like, oh, well, the ring is basically like a trampoline. But that's not the case. The wrestling rings are actually really hard.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how, like, some of them are actually just... he talks about the different wood that they use, and then there's like a pad and then like a canvas.
And what was it he said? That if you hit your head, the back of your head on it, when you fall one time, you know, you learn not to do that ever again?
Yeah. Yeah, you would. Yeah, because again, if it was a trampoline or even close to that, it wouldn't hurt when you hit your head. But, I mean, people get injured hitting their head in the ring all the time. It's not. I mean, it does have some give. But it's not that kind of give. It's if you ever, like, I mean, I wouldn't do this because you'll probably get in trouble, but if you ever jumped up in a ring or just reached over and slapped it, you would see that it's not a trampoline by any means.
Right.
But is there anything else we wanted to plug? Come see us at the First and Last. That's going to be a really cool show. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be like an old school Kill J show. With us, Seeking Seven and Five Stories, our friends from Jackson, Tennessee.
Oh, if anybody would like to see Kill Pop Culture at any upcoming cons that are happening in a reasonable driving distance, hit us up. We would like to, you know, come hang out, meet you guys, you know, whatever. So let us know something.
Thanks for listening. We've been broadcasting live from the upper basement floor.
Upper basement floor.
Right under
Jimmy Hoffa.
I'm just going to keep saying high atop the first floor because that sounds funny. We've been broadcasting semi-live from high atop the first floor of Kill J headquarters. I had to hit the bell with my hat because I couldn't reach
it. Oh, you know what I'm going to do one of these days? I'm going to throw you off on that. I'm actually going to set my microphone up in the attic now.
Yeah, we have an attic now.
So I'll be above.
So we kind of do have two floors.
Yeah, we do now.
Oh, next week we're supposed to be, we're not only interviewing Elbow from Arcadia, but we're going to debut the Conspiracies That Don't Suck. So I've got that to look forward to. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I hope exactly. Our listeners like that.
We're going to have several different little segments that we're going to try to keep doing. Now that you mentioned that, I want to plug that one more time, too, is the Movies That Don't Suck, even though people say they do segment that we do. If there's a movie that you're a diehard fan of but got pretty bad reviews or whatever, hit us up. We'll watch it and we'll, you know, do
We'll get some justice for you.
Yeah, we'll do a segment on it. But you've just got to hit us up and tell us. Let us know.
Another idea I had for a segment today, and this would be like a small segment. It wouldn't be very long. But there's a lot of comic books out there, taking it back to comics again, that I'm surprised for one reason or another why they're not worth a lot more than they are. Because there's one in particular, and I won't get into it now, but I was looking at it, and like, there's so many things going for this one book that makes it special, and I was like, this thing ought to be worth a lot of money. But you go on eBay and you can buy it for like 10 or 15 bucks. And that might, you know, make some people want to go buy those particular issues because they're very affordable. And I guess I might call them. What are you pointing at?
Finish what you're saying. I just had a brain fart.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'll call the segment, comic books that don't suck or something. That seems to be a theme.
Yeah.
But, you know, I may just mention a particular book that I think should be worth a lot of money, and or should be very valuable, or one that you should definitely check out. But anyway, that's just an idea I had tossed around in my head of doing something like that, because there's a lot of books out there that people don't realize. They're like, wow, that does sound pretty cool. And then you assume that it would be worth hundreds of dollars, and you go out and you could get a decent copy of it for like $20.
So if anybody has a segment idea that they would like for us to maybe touch on or even consider, you know, let us know. We'll try to do as much as we can. We like variety.
Love you, bye.
Love you, mean it.